it is a bit sad to see how many people go in the world without really asking themselves, what is it that they do really, really want? Not mm-hmm. what society tells me what I want, not what the company expects me to do or what they tell me that I want, but rather, what do I want? There's this quote from Jim Carrey, I wish everybody were rich and famous and have everything they wanted so that they realize this is not the answer.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Jordi Valguera. I got it. Look at me. I'm feeling international today. He is a C-level mentor and strategic advisor at Down to Earth Solutions. He's been in the corporate world for over 20 years, and he's very interested in learning and personal development. I can attest to this. It comes up in every conversation we have. He's also passionate about techniques and systems on how to be the best version of yourself. Welcome to the show, Jordi.
Oh, thank you so much, Kenny. It's been a while, but I'm really delighted to be here.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun, but tell me, what is on your mind?
At the moment, what's on my mind is how can I have more time with my wife and my daughter? And mm-hmm. related to that is how can I better choose the gigs and the projects that I decide to work on so that that is one of the accomplishments.
Gotcha. And I think that that's a, obviously I've shared on previous episodes, like I live in a zoo, essentially. Like I have five kids and a wife and three dogs and a cat.
That's going to be wild indeed.
I'm not exaggerating on any of those things. Some people think that's hyperbole, but I've also been wrestling with that pull between doing things professionally that interest me and fulfilling drives and goals and things like that, but also the desire for that deep connection with my family and my loved ones. What have you found out, whether it's in business conversations, LinkedIn, conferences like the ones that you yeah. speak at? What is the current thinking or the prevailing wisdom about how to manage that tension?
My take on this is generally, if you go into the corporate world, there is a common thread, which is you start growing, you start climbing up the stairs of the career ladder. And beware what you ask for, because you might eventually get it. And by mentoring some execs, C-level, large companies, mm-hmm. one conversation I had a couple of weeks ago was that, hey, don't think this is so fun to be at this level, because I am at a country where I don't necessarily want to be. My wife or my husband do not want to be here, and therefore they're unhappy about that. And as a side note, I don't have any friends here. I just need to hang out with my peers at work. So the nice thing about after 20 years in the corporate world, going independent and allowing myself to choose who I want to work for and in what matter, is that now there are some red lines that I never cross. And one of them is I want to spend time with my family. We had a daughter with my wife that's 6 years old now. At the moment, my decision was, I'm not going to cross the Atlantic anymore, because I thought that would be enough for me to spend time. But hey, I tricked myself. And then I realized, like, I could spend the whole week traveling throughout Europe and based in Barcelona. And then when I went independent, I said, that's not going to happen anymore. And that's one of the dimensions that I used for deciding whether I want to take a new gig or not.
Gotcha. Now, one of the things you had mentioned shortly before recording was this concept of a lighthouse. Mm-hmm. Can you describe that and talk about how that has been helpful to you and maybe how you're helping sure. some of these executives you're mentoring with that?
Sure. Believe it or not, it is a bit sad to see how many people go in the world without really asking themselves, what is it that they do really, really want? Not mm-hmm. what society tells me what I want, not what the company expects me to do or what they tell me that I want, not bonus, not personal, professional growth and new positions, etc., but rather, what do I want? And yeah, sometimes rich and famous and have everything I want, etc. There's this quote from Jim Carrey, I wish everybody were rich and famous and have everything they wanted so that they realize this is not the answer. And that's something I learned about a few years ago. And I realized that there are a few things that are key pillars for me. And I want to keep close to me every time that I work, because working requires very often at least half of your waking time. And it's a relevant thing. And I came up with this idea of lighthouse or of compass, so that every time that I was either talking to a client and being offered a new opportunity to work, etc., I would contrast that against this compass and think, okay, does it relate to what I really want to do? And that helps me make better decisions, at least make decisions that are more consistent to what I want to achieve in my life.
Which, and I love that. And one of the reasons why I love it is, I have an affinity for it because I help companies. Like when I'm working with nonprofits or some That's of right. these more purpose-driven businesses, we talk about from a corporate and I don't mean that as like big business corporate, but just meaning in the strictest definition of the word, like corporately as the collective, that you need to find the things that matter to you that are how you're wired so that everyone makes decisions in a way that aligns. Now, when in the System and Soul framework that I use, I call that a roadmap. And we have something that is also called a personal roadmap. But and as you and I were talking just before, you said that you would also see a difference between what a personal roadmap would entail and maybe what this compass or this lighthouse concept would entail. Yeah. Can you contrast those for me?
I can tell you what I think a personal roadmap looks like, at least in my head, versus what a personal compass looks like. For me, a roadmap entails time. So and entails milestones. First, you get here. And then once I accomplish this, then I grow and then try something else and then I grow, or I'm in this position and then I want to try and now I have people reporting to me, or now I want to have more responsibility and multiple countries, etc. So that is somehow in my head a list of interest or potential achievements you can get to. While compass is more of directional, tells me what are my pillars, what are the things that I want to protect and I want to make sure that are taking place as my life goes by. Let me give you an example. In my head, personal roadmap might be, now I want to, as we talked in other conversations, I'm growing a business. I want to see whether that business is profitable and then successful. And then in the future, I want to study something else and then learn a new language. So that might be roadmap for me. While compass has to do with, at least my compass has four key dimensions. One is, whenever I'm working, I don't want to be stressed. I just want to have some time for me and have time to think. I've been stressed for many, many years, and I don't operate that when I'm stressed. So that's one dimension. If there's a company that asks me to come join them, etc., and I know that's too stressful, like, no, this is a red line for me, not applying for it. Second is, this is indispensable. I need to feel that I'm learning every time. And not everybody does need that. But in my case, If I do something and then I feel stuck and I'm not learning, I get bored and then I get frustrated because I'm not learning. Yeah. And that's pretty much the opposite to what companies need in many cases, because companies need somebody to learn. And then once you learn something, then you just do it repeatedly. You just execute and execute. The third one is high value, being able to make real impact, not just being there and doing what others think is valuable, but rather, am I sensing that I'm adding value? And the fourth one has to do with family time. So one is personal time for me. The other one is, since my daughter was born, I want to take her to school. I want to pick her up from school. I want to have time with my wife every week, at least once during the weekdays. We have lunch together, and then we have time for our conversations. And then there are these extra, that are probably not red lines, but I want to meet interesting people. So if I'm in the corporate world and I don't change positions and I don't move from there, it's pretty much always meeting the same people. And last one is, I want to feel that whatever I'm doing is lasting throughout time. So it's not something that changes 3 months from now. And those things, those dimensions help me significantly when I get confronted with new opportunities.
I love all of that, the concept as well as your own personal ones, because a lot of those resonate with me as well. How do you think about those things, like the compass and then the items on your compass? How do you see those as being different from, say, core values, which I know you've probably seen a lot of different versions of and stuff in your corporate experience? How do you make sense of the compass with core values? Because I could see potentially some overlap.
Oh, there's definitely overlap for me. Core values have to do with family, has to do with friendship and being present and enjoying time with others. And there might be other core values, like being loyal or having time to think, these sort of aspects. At the same time, some of them are more of intrinsic core values. I see them as what defines me. And compass is more of some sort of rule of thumb for when something pops up, if I want to decide to pursue it or not. Even I have quantified each of the items in this compass, and then I just get a number. So this opportunity is a 7 out of 10, not taking it. Well, the 10, if I have enough workload, but that allows me to better choose, and also being more aligned and also being more relaxed when it comes to professional. And core sounds more like what defines me, what are my values as a person.
Gotcha. Yep. Yeah. So it really gets to the heart of your identity, whereas the compass is more about your
it's
actions.
More pragmatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Like what are the things I will and not do? And certainly the core values influence some of that. I don't hear you saying that those are totally disconnected, but they can be used separately in the way that you make decisions. And for you, it sounds like core values also do a lot more to govern relationships than it does like performance, task, work related type things.
That's right.
So when someone is operating without a compass, what's the cost of that? Like somebody may be listening to this, say, Jordy, this sounds great. All those things sound beautiful. Good for you. I don't know what that means for me, or would that really help me all that much? I find the most deceptive things are those things that are almost like opportunity costs. Like we don't know until we try a different way. Mm-hmm. Like you could say, I'm going to make more sales calls, so I'm going to get more sales. People can understand that. But I think a lot of times they don't understand stripping away or simplifying or putting boundaries around things and what that's costing them by not living that way. Can you speak to that?
Yes, absolutely. It cost me 20 years and a daughter to realize that life's short and you do a bunch of things and then you get old and then you die. Yeah. And what there was this time where my daughter was born, I had decided I didn't want to cross the Atlantic for a while because I wanted to spend time with her. And still I was very busy, waking up at 3:30 in the morning and then go to Frankfurt and then spend the whole day there and then back. And then as I was waking up, she was sleeping. when I was flying back and I was getting back home, she was sleeping. So I started missing, she standing up for the first time, she mumbling the first words and like, nope, 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 nope. I don't want to miss that. And that's when I started having in my head this idea of, wait a second, what is valuable to me? Until then, I did not ask myself that deeply enough. Therefore, the rest of players would decide what is valuable for me. And what society says is just be productive, just do something, work for somebody else, do da da da.
Right.
What the company says is just grow and then have more responsibility and take it and be committed for the company, etc. When I did that exercise, and it took me several months, I realized, wait a second, what is valuable for me is this, 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 and that. And somebody not having done this exercise, it might be not, that that you go blindfolded and that you follow somebody else's lead, but you don't realize. And there is something that is very striking to me. There's this work from a nurse from the UK that was based in Australia, that she wrote a book called The Five Regrets of the Dying. You heard of it?
Yeah, actually, I have. I've not read it, but I have heard it mentioned.
Never mind. She talks about five dimensions that when we are close to dying, we might think of. And she was a palliative cancer nurse, so she was asking these questions to these people. The first one, the one that struck me the most is, I wish I had the life true to myself, not the life others expected from me. Yeah. And then I put myself in my deathbed and thought, how sad if I'm whatever years old and there's nothing else I can do. And I turn back and realize I didn't do what I wanted to do. I did what people expected me to do. I did what people told me to do, not what I wanted to do. And it became so profound for me that I decided, no, that's not going to happen. That's why I every day, every week, I pay attention to it.
That is so good. And now I'm going to go and add another book to my Amazon list.
Just imagine this. Just imagine being there. And feeling that you had one opportunity, and sorry to get you a bit emotional, but you had one opportunity and you misused that opportunity, and there's nothing you can do about it now.
Yeah, sorry. It comes at an interesting time. I've actually been reflecting a lot on that. I'm not sure if you saw on LinkedIn,
yes,
my father-in-law recently passed away.
Yeah.
From cancer and was under palliative care and was here in hospice. The hospice team was just phenomenal. But I've been reflecting a lot on what really does matter to me. Like, what will I want said of me when I'm in that position? It's just striking to me the number of people who showed up, sent text messages, emails, Facebook messages, things like that, just saying what an impact he had on their life, just the kindness that he showed them. And he was never a rich man but by financial standards, but once he put alcohol behind him, became this wonderful compassionate man. And now he's got this great reputation and this heritage, and his kids and his grandkids think really well of him and have this high opinion, and they're always going to remember him in this high place. And it's made me think, for all the drive I have, what has it amounted to? I have some great accomplishments, and certainly I'm proud of things I've done. But as I've shared in a couple of talks recently, there's a cost to that.
Yes.
Because essentially when you just, I don't mean to go on a rant here, but there is this false false sense that your personality is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And really your personality is a survival mechanism and puts you to sleep. Like you're on autopilot, kind of like what you're talking about, is you're blindfolded and you're being led. Yes. Yeah. And so often that's what a personality does. And I don't begrudge anybody who's operating that way. We all do. But at some moment, I think we step into what you're describing as, wait. Okay, I'm glad that the way I've lived and the way I've done something has been meaningful to some people, but has it also been meaningful to me in the Venn diagram of life? And who doesn't love a good Venn diagram?
The ikigai or the whatever.
Yeah, yes. Or you look at Jim Collins with the hedgehog concept. He yes. does a variation for individuals, and which I think that there's a short video on YouTube about that if anybody's interested. But it's just, yeah, I could be good at it and maybe I was making money at it, but was I also passionate about it? Did it help me reach those long-term goals? And those are a lot of the things I'm hearing you say, and I think and there's a recency bias for me, but mm-hmm. I think that there's such an importance on getting clear on that. Stephen Covey talks about begin with the end in mind. Yes. We talk about reverse engineering things.
Yes.
And what I hear you describing is really, let's reverse engineer our life.
Or the key values in our life. Yes.
Or the key values. Yeah. Like let's not that you have to plan every moment, every decision, but if we say these things should guide me and most likely are going to lead to a life that was meaningful, it was impactful, it was valuable to me, it was valuable to others.
Yes.
And balance those relationships and the results that you wanted to create over the course of your life. Because as you mentioned, life isn't all that long. It's here and it's gone.
Yes. And also related to this recency bias, one aspect that I realized is when you come up with something that is valuable for you, for some time, that is the go-to thing. That is what helps you think about. Later on, if you don't reflect on it or keep thinking about it and growing into it, this might be like the compass of the year or the compass of the month, but you don't do anything about it. You tend to forget again. It's so strong, the force, the energy that moves mm-hmm. you into the being unconscious or not paying attention, that you need to, same as with faith and prayers, you pray every day because every day you want to stay connected to that. If when you don't do that, you forget. And how sad to get to the end of your life and realizing that you forgot about yourself, that you were living outward for others, but you were not living for you, or you were not paying attention to your needs or your accomplishments or what you wanted to, who you wanted to become.
Yeah. What you were just saying reminds me of a conversation I had last night with a friend, and she's in the process of launching her first for-profit business. She's launched a nonprofit before, but now mm-hmm. she's launching a for-profit that helps nonprofits get started.
Yeah.
And she was saying like, look, I feel like I've misunderstood these things and I've screwed this up and trying to get to launch and she's beating the hell out of herself. As a lot, I think high performers are prone to do, if mm-hmm, we're being mm-hmm. honest, I know I'm yes. prone to that. And I asked her, I said, I know you well enough to know that you're a very, very loyal person and very, very connected. She's a great caretaker of her friends. And I said, would you ever let someone talk to one of your friends the way that you are talking to yourself? And she goes, absolutely not. And said, then why would you talk to yourself that way? And similar to what you're saying is like, we would do all these things and then that would take care of and be meaningful to all these others around us, but never include ourselves. And one of the things I would love for you to touch on is that maybe counters what I hear a lot in at least popular media is this self-care and I got to do me and I got to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like steering into the other ditch of just it's selfishness and self-centeredness in the name of self-care and taking care of some of yourself. I hear you talking about a both and, not an either or. Can you mm-hmm. address that?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I'm doing my trainings in personal productivity, one of the aspects that I see people failing miserably at is, and many of you that will listen will probably refer to that or connect to that, is you have your calendar, and your calendar has some slots. And then those slots are being filled by others because they send meeting invites and then da, 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 da. And then what happens is we feel guilty when we block a slot for ourselves to think, just mm-hmm. think. And then we feel we shouldn't be doing that. Or I tell them, like, just put your headphones on, just act as if you're in the meeting. Let's record, put it as a video, and then think, because you need that. The reason I'm connecting it to that is what I tell them in those trainings is I refer them, and it's funny that it's the second time that I'm putting a reference to religion, but I'm telling them, Jesus said, love the others the same way as you love yourself. Not love others more than you love yourself. When you love others more than you love yourself, you forget about yourself. You mm-hmm. cannot be the best, your best version. When you love yourself too much so that you don't care about others and you don't care about the impact or consequences that others might experience from your actions, that is also not helpful. But mm-hmm. having this balance of, yes, I want to help you, but I also want to have time for me. So sometimes do not get mad if I don't reply to the WhatsApp during the same day. Do not get upset if I tell you, yes, we can meet, but it's going to be in 2 weeks or any, because that is in a way that is self-respect, and that is trying to care for others, but while also caring for ourselves.
I really appreciate that. I've actually, within my church, when I teach or preach or something, bring up the same mm-hmm, thing mm-hmm. is, how can you love your neighbor if you hate yourself? Like, right. You either need to start loving yourself more, or I guess you need to hate everybody. You gotta balance that out. Yeah. And that's a tough tension to manage. But I think tough tensions help create strong leaders, strong people, mm-hmm. right? It's rarely either or. It's a balancing of the tension and figuring out where in that tension is right for you, and how might that shift? Like you talked about scheduling. I'll mention a tool here in a second that's really been helpful to me in avoiding some of that guilt, because I felt that very thing. Like, who am I? And or fear of missing the next big deal that you're going to close because booked it, and they're like, oh, you're not available till next week. Like, oh, I guess I could cancel lunch and this time to plan and all this other stuff.
Time with the kids, yes.
Or time with the kids, and you're saying, well, I'm doing it for the kids right there. Like,
yeah.
It's easy to believe, and I'm not saying it's 100% false, but it may not be as true as we would lead ourselves to believe. I know I deal with that quite a lot. So I forgot the other point I was going to make, but the tool that has been incredibly helpful is a tool called Reclaim.ai. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it has been the way that it's developed, and it is different from, say, like, I know that there's Motion AI, which helps, and that I think that one's a much better one for like productivity and team scheduling and staying on top of that. But Reclaim, it almost is like a AI executive assistant. And I've gone in there and said, what are the things that I want to do? The compass piece of I want to exercise regularly, just because that I know that I'm my best self when that is happening on a regular basis, just the way I think and the way I show up. Prayer and meditation, reading my Bible, those things are important. So I'm calendaring it. Now, do some things get moved around? Yes. And this is where I love the fact that instead of manually carrying this cognitive burden of like, how do I shift everything, is I can place something and it knows the priority or the importance to me and just finds the next slot. And so now I actually have people who use Meetings Links, and I use HubSpot, but I know there's Calendly and Acuity and probably a dozen others. Those people have to schedule around the tasks that I have said, or the practices that I have said are important to me. And it felt really weird. And I felt very guilty when I implemented this several weeks ago. I took inventory at the beginning of July and did my own little personal quarterly reflection and said, I'm not really happy with the way this is going. Kind of similar to like what you said, I need to put those boundaries in place and be flexible. But I put them in place, and ever since then, I feel my capacity to handle all that life is throwing at me lately has been much better. My thinking, for the most part, has been clearer. I've been a lot more connected with my kids and my wife and my dogs, but not the cat. But it's been surprising, though. And so I'm looking forward to continually refining that and feeling less and less guilty that I'm missing out on the next great deal or the next big meeting or connection or something like that. And just saying, you know what, I need time for this so that I can be 100% wherever I'm showing up, which as knowledge workers, you and I, that is, we got to treat our brain like a professional athlete would treat their body, because that's how we make our living, except it's harder because we don't see it. We don't see the muscle. Like, we can go to the gym and see like, okay, I'm a little stronger, but when we don't get enough sleep, when we don't make time for things that energize us, when we don't drink enough water, when we don't take care of our nutrition, things like that, it all impacts this organ that is really where we're making a living, making a difference, building connections. So rant over, sorry, but it's something I'm deeply passionate about, but have really struggled with, and it's been really refreshing to hear a lot of the things that you've been sharing. I feel less like an idiot.
You know what, Kenny? Because don't feel like that. Guilt and the inability to say no are the big drivers for people to let others use times of their working time, of their working schedule that they don't want them to be used. So the problem is, and then through 20 years of teaching personal productivity and stuff like that, the problem is not the tool or the technique. The problem is dealing with your own feeling that you should be doing that for others versus deciding, no, I want to have time for myself. I want to protect this wonderful organ that you just mentioned. Saying no to others somehow implies saying yes to yourself. And paying attention to every time you feel forced or you feel that you need to do something but you don't feel like it, you're saying yes to somebody else and you're saying no to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes me think of the book, The Coaching Habit. I don't know if you've come across that. And one of the questions in there, because there's seven critical questions. I recommend that book to everybody, but he talks about the trade-off question. If you're saying yes to this, what are you saying no to?
That's right.
Nothing's ever done in a vacuum. And so understanding the trade-offs of those decisions, I think can be a great gateway to alleviating the guilt or the fear that you may feel, but I think can also bring clarity to your decision-making overall. I feel like there's like 14,000 things that we could go over and have a blast doing it. Well, I haven't created my version of the Joe Rogan podcast where I can go 3 hours, but
never mind. You're in your way. Yeah.
Jordy, if someone wanted to take a step towards not living by autopilot, but instead living by a compass, Right. What's the first step someone could take in the next 24 hours with little to no money to make progress?
Yeah, always it's little to no money because it's about thinking differently. I'll tell you the first two or three steps that I would do. So you cannot change something unless you become aware that something is not in line to what you want. So first one is awareness. You get more awareness by you just download from your phone an app that or pill reminder or some sort of reminder that at several times a day just beeps and then makes you think, was I happy? Am I doing what I want to be doing? Something like that. That is a way to confront how I'm feeling at the moment and what I'm doing versus is this related to how I want my life to be?
Sort of like a self-check-in.
Self-checking, yeah. But use an external tool as a notifier or something because otherwise the autopilot takes over everything.
Get you one of these, a little feelings wheel. That'll help you.
There you go. There's one called Moodle or Mood, I don't remember, which is every time that there's a check-in and then you can choose whether you're happy, sad, or angry or something like that. And then throughout the week, you can check how frequently I was feeling that emotion. It's not necessarily about the emotion itself. It's about, is this aligned to how I want to live? Answering this question from Bronnie Ware, this woman, is this the life that I want to live for myself, or is this something that I'm doing because others expect me from doing that? And then some ideas will start to come up. Just take note of those ideas. When you go to sleep, doesn't matter. And that will be the foundations for being able to create the compass. The compass is the second or third step. Do not try to create the compass, or just try, but just know that you will have to go through it and iterate several times until there's something that clearly reflects what you want to achieve. But without self-awareness, you cannot move forward.
100%. I actually gave a talk on that yesterday. I think that's a great starting spot with the self-check-in, with the mood and then just reflecting back over it over the course of a week. A lot of people use that for changing their diet, for personal productivity, more. Like doing the time, like, where did I spend all my time this week? And then go, well, I might be wasting a few hours. It's like Facebook for 6 hours a day. What? Yeah. I didn't get anything done. So I think that's a great place to start. Jordy, this has been a phenomenal conversation. If somebody wanted to know more about you, more about Down to Earth Solutions, or maybe had some follow-up questions, where can they connect with you and find out more about you?
Yeah, pretty much Down to Earth is the company from my wife and I. So they can reach out to LinkedIn directly. I'm very pleased to reply, and I'm also with lots of ideas and coming up with new things every day. So happy to reply, reach out over LinkedIn, and I'll be pleased to respond, and happy to have also a virtual coffee conversation with anybody that's interested.
Absolutely. Yep. So we'll put the link to your LinkedIn in the show notes, but thank you again. And thank you to all you listeners. I don't do this show just because I do enjoy it. I get something out of this, but I also do it because I hope it's delivering value to you. But you can help me shape the show and let me know if this is meaningful by liking, rating, reviewing, subscribing, whatever the right button is on the platform of your choice. And leave a review, leave some feedback if there's some things that you'd love to hear or somebody you'd love to hear from. Doing that also gets the show a little bit more attention in the algorithm. And you never know, this may be the thing that helps fellow leader find the conversation that unlocks their next step. And that would be just a wonderful way to pay things forward. But until next time, change the way you think will change the way you lead. We'll see you.